promised I'd give you a talk on rebirth tonight in celebration of the fact that I managed to finally do a YouTube video on Paticca Samuppada. So hopefully this will tie in at least a little bit to that, because you can't do justice to this very deep aspect of the Buddha's teaching in a half-hour talk. So it does require a lot of contemplation and a lot of inquiry. So doing a few videos on the subject over time I think might be quite helpful. Evidence for rebirth.
What evidence do you have for rebirth?
I always find it highly, not highly amusing, it's a bit disrespectful, but I do find it amusing how people cling to the notion of there only being one life, given that it is an unsubstantiated view, when they could hold the view that life is an infinite playground, a never-ending infinite playground, but that's less preferable
to holding to a one-life view.
So I guess the view is there being one life. I guess it is that there are these myriad conscious experiences that we all go through. There are sights, there's hearing and seeing and tasting and touching and smelling, and there's thinking. Essentially every conscious experience is constructed of those things, isn't it? And running through it is like a thread through the beads in a necklace, is this unchanging quality of selfhood, something that just does not change. It's there in every experience, unchanged. It is me. This is the me of me. This is what I am. And that, so we go through one lifetime with this me that obstructs your happiness, controls and manipulates everything around it, which it has to do because it's only got one lifetime, 60, 70, 80 years to find its happiness before the great anvil falls from the sky, and then there is annihilation. And I wonder how that makes people feel. What kind of quality of life that gives people. How much happiness it gives, or how much stress that it gives. Given that you've only got that time in order to find and maintain genuine, deep, abiding happiness before it's all taken away from you forever. And I wonder how that person feels when they come across somebody who doesn't feel like that and doesn't hold that view, that holds the view that indeed there are these conscious experiences that are actually arising and passing away due to conditions. It's astonishing, it's mysterious, it's wonderful. There isn't actually that thread running through it. There is no requirement for anything to persist through time. There's just this unfolding of this marvelous, mysterious experience we called life. And then at the end of this particular experience, then there is some kind of transformation and a continuation of conscious experience through other means. And that there is just this infinite playground, and that, yeah, this scheme of things is quite tough, so we treat it like a school. There are some difficult lessons to learn, so the idea is to graduate, and if you don't graduate this time, you might need to come back a couple more times to finish off the job. But then when you graduate, it's like, yay, infinite playground, here we come. So I put it to you, and this is not evidence at all, this is just a fanciful idea of mine. Which do you find more preferable? The one life view, or the just as a view? Just life is an infinite playground? Yeah, we've got to learn some lessons. But then after that, yay. Just infinite sort of exploration of mystery and of the great mystery in whatever way, with infinite potential, the capacity for infinite forms. Things you could never have dreamt of in this lifetime. So yeah, so no, I accept that that is not evidence. So we want evidence. Well, firstly, there is absolutely no evidence to support the view of self. None whatsoever. Well, from a Buddhist perspective, from having actually taken the time to check it all out, there's absolutely no evidence for this unchanging entity that exists through time, unchanged by anything, any condition. And yet, there is overwhelming evidence for rebirth, for the processes that give rise to conscious experience and the processes that mean that it is an ever-changing, ever-flowing stream of consciousness, never the same for two moments, that is driven by mind and supported by material processes. The evidence for that is overwhelming. It's this. Is all the evidence that you need. Everything you need to know about how life works is actually currently unfolding in your experience at this moment. However, it is deep, it is subtle, it's profound and difficult to see, difficult to apprehend. The Buddha said it's intelligible only by the wise. So we have to wise up in order to actually apprehend and comprehend the evidence that we need. But it's all here. So this is what the Buddha calls paticca-samuppada, condition-dependent origination. So find some evidence for rebirth. You're present now. Am I going to get away with this? I don't know. I'll give it a try. If it doesn't work, I'll just go and sit down and call the evening off. Your present now used to be your future. You were sitting at home or getting home from work and you thought, right, I'm going to go to the meditation center tonight. So there had to be intention and volition. And so now your future has become your present. You're experiencing, to some degree or other, what you had intended. You intended to be at the House of Inner Tranquility. You willed that into existence. You performed actions. So there was becoming. And, hey presto, your future is now your present. What I'm trying to introduce you to there is the idea, firstly, that it is volition that creates future conscious experience. And that we employ this profound and deep process all the time. But because most people are so mired in the perception of permanence and selfhood, they don't actually realise the magic of what it is that you've just accomplished. It's miraculous. Even the fact of doing that is an absolute miracle. That's not going to come over very well on the recording. But I'll just leave them to imagine what I just did there. What on earth did he do? So, the point being that there is this magical process when an immaterial process causes a material process to occur. That's an absolute wonder. But because we're so mired, so glummed in, so not aware, truly aware and truly awake of what's actually unfolding, we just take it absolutely and utterly for granted. But the law of karma, and this was essentially what we're talking about, the fact that volitions create future conscious experience, is an absolute treasure once you understand it, because you can then direct your life in ways that are going to produce more pleasant conscious experience and fewer unpleasant conscious experiences. Again, this is a bit of a gamble, but if you're up for a challenge and you want to find out whether the law of karma is actually true, how about going raping and pillaging through Bradford and Avon for a protracted period of time? You could burgle all the shops. You could just go around kicking and punching people and setting things on fire. And then see, after a protracted period of life, see what kind of conscious future that you actually created for yourself. Alternatively, It's probably, as someone trying to be a spiritual teacher, I should probably not have said that. Well, you could cut it out, couldn't you, and the recording of it. What would be better? Spend the exact same protracted length of time actually performing very generous, kind acts of service, both to yourself and to others, to, you know, to be friendly, to be there for others. Christmas, great time to put all of that kind of thing into practice. And just generally, yeah, try to live as conscientious and ethical life as you feel you can, and then find out as a consequence what sort of conscious future that you've created for yourself. Now, the thing is, we assume, and this goes back to the self-view, we assume that it's the same me in the future that was the me that undertook all those actions in the past. We assume that there is something that is permanent in all of that. So we disregard the fact that everything in our experience has actually arisen and passed away countless times, millions of times, billions of times, trillions of times before we experience that result, those results. It is an assumption to believe that there is this thread of unchangingness. And what is actually happening is it's all arising and passing away due to conditions that leads to that future result. So the reason we sit in meditation and actually observe things arising and passing away is to see precisely that, that it all works due to the unfolding of conditions, right? The point being, if I can remember what it was, the point being is that you realise through meditation, from watching closely, all the components of your conscious experience arising and passing away due to conditions, that there is no beginning point to that process, and there is no end point to that process. Yes, we're only actually aware of our present experience, but we are seeing the fundamental building blocks of the arising of conscious experience. We are seeing life actually happening. We are understanding the processes by which life actually unfolds, and we are, because we are seeing the most fundamental laws, we make a correct inference based on direct evidence that it's always been this way and it always will be this way. That conscious experience, existence, cannot arise in any other way. And there cannot be any thread, anything, any self that persists through time. It's all arising and passing away due to conditions. And because you've understood the law, and you've correctly inferred and understood that it is both true of the past and true of the future, there is the comprehension that its volition is karma, that the result of karma is future conscious experience, and for there to be future conscious experience, there has to be a mind and body in an environment so that it can experience the results of its actions. So you get this endless cycle of existence, coming into being, passing away, coming into being, passing away. And the person that wants evidence for the existence of rebirth also wants an answer to the question of, if there's no self, what gets reborn? Well, I've just given it to you. You can keep the idea of self. You do not have to get rid of the idea of self. It's just you can use it wisely. The Buddha himself said, I use the terms, I'm not confused by them. So he was, it's like when he had to describe something that he needed to do, he didn't have to describe the whole of existence, he just said, could you just pass me that? Like any intelligent person would. So you get to use the terms, so we can look at the same flow of conscious experience in different ways. On the one hand, you can view it as a me, as a being who goes through a life, who has a name, who has a family, who has a career, who has, you know, all the things of a conventional life, and at the end of that, they die. But that's not the end of the flow of conscious experience. That person performs so many volitions, and those volitions need a result. So that leads to the production of a new body and a new mind in a new environment that can continue that process of experiencing results. So it just carries on. Now you can look at that purely in terms of ultimates arising and passing away. There's just the flow of conscious experience, and understand that there's no thread in any of that. It's just arising and passing away due to conditions, and that is, again, that's actually a process operating outside of time. So, if there's no self, what gets reborn? It depends upon the way that you're looking at the information, the data. That is the very best way to come to understand rebirth. There are other ways too. And this gets a bit more woo-woo. Hey, it's Christmas. Would you like to hear some woo-woo?
Yeah.
Wow, that was... You really have woken up. All right, woo-woo. So, it's not woo-woo, actually. It's absolutely part of the Buddha's teaching. In the Pali Canon, you read about the Buddha leaving his earthly body and going visiting celestial realms and celestial beings coming and hanging out with the Buddha and his monks in the forests and stuff. And it's for our sort of scientific, materialist, Western mindset, it can be quite a lot to take. Until that is, you have your own experiences of these kinds of things. And there is something to be said for samatha meditation. It can be quite revealing in a different way to vipassana. And it certainly gives you hints and clues as to there being more ways of experiencing and perceiving existence than is normally allowable in our society. Essentially, it seems to me that what's required is an absolutely fine degree of mindfulness and concentrated attention on a single object to the exclusion of everything else for the purpose of the mind forgetting to perceive the world around it. So you have to get so concentrated and so focused that you forget all of this, absolutely, including the body, that the mind is no longer perceiving sounds, it's no longer perceiving body. We exist currently in the plane of existence, which is called Karma Loka, which is a sensuous sphere. So it's sights and sounds and tastes and touches, it's physical experiences. But there are other planes, here comes the woo-woo, frequencies that the mind can dial into. That's fun. It's shocking material, I know. So it's once you have accomplished the task of no longer perceiving karma loka, physical existence, it's then possible to retune the dial and start to become aware of, oh, you're really paying attention now. Why is it always this way around? Why is this always the exciting stuff? So, yeah, you start to redial and your frequency changes and you start to experience other things that appear to be just as able to occur as this, but it's just that we just don't tune into those particular frequencies. Right? So, yeah, so I have had experiences of sitting in the chair, taking the meditation, and knowing I'm sitting in the chair, taking the meditation, but I'm also flying over very unusual scenes of coasts and oceans and things at the very self-same time. So it's the mind's just flipping from awareness of karma loka, probably because I'm taking the meditation and I have to... This is why I'm in the lunchtime today. Forgot to take my teacher his meal. That's terrible, isn't it? The aspect of us wants to deny... There's a part of us that wants to deny all this and say, well, you're just dreaming, or, you know, you're mad, or, because it doesn't fit into that very tight scientific materialist view of the world. But these things do occur. The strangest thing that happened to me, strictly between us, is the time when I'd got a bit sleepy in a meditation, and then I came to. And so there was just mind at that time. I wasn't aware of my physical experience. And there was this person looking at me. And it was a person looking at me. It wasn't just like a sort of two-dimensional picture. It was as real as this. It was just like, yeah, and the person was responding to me. Now, the curious thing was, this person looked exactly like me. Except he or she had, because it depended which way you looked at this being. If you looked at it one way, it was definitely a he, and if you looked at it another way, it was definitely a she. But it was definitely me. Except that he, she had absolutely gorgeous flowing golden hair. No gap in the teeth, no bags under the eyes, was just looking at me with just there was a sense of absolute loving welcome that absolutely just, to the point where I went, this can't be real, and I just came out of it completely. Just absolutely astonishing. So, is this proof? Is this evidence? I don't care. It was fantastic. Because this is the thing you have to understand. It's just like, none of this has to be proven to anybody. I'm not saying this because I want to prove anything to you. I'm just saying it because it's Christmas. None of this. You don't have to prove any of this. You don't have to prove the cessation of suffering to anybody. You only have to... You know, you didn't come to your first interview here and say, Paul, I'm here to prove to the Western world, Western civilization, the truth of Nirvana. You came here and said, Paul, I'm suffering, help me get rid of it. And that's the only important thing. And to be honest, what I'm talking about here are the fireworks. You know, they're just lovely, incredible sort of displays of what's possible out there. And you'll get hints and experiences on the Vipassana path too, as you get concentrated, as you see the arising and passing way of phenomena, and you let go, and you're not clinging to anything. You can go into some really deep states of bliss and tranquility and equanimity, and they are religious experiences. There is a sense of the religious, of the. You don't have to prove it to anyone. It's not important. You're doing it because you want to be free of suffering. That's the only reasonable approach. So it really doesn't matter if other people don't understand and don't get it and don't appreciate it. Some stuff I'd keep under your hat a little bit, maybe, if you care how other people feel about you. But ultimately, it doesn't matter. And what they're giving us hints and tips about the magnificence of the great mystery of life. That we're here in this particular human realm, and it's tight and it's difficult and it's challenging, and there's gravity to deal with every day and having to find food to eat and all this stuff. And it's a trial. But we're having to do it because we've come to school, because we've got lessons to learn. Once you've graduated, all of this great mystery, all of this infinite variety, infinite possibility, remains to be discovered endlessly.